Good morning to everybody, and welcome again to our meeting on this Lord's Day, and especially so if you are one of our guests this morning. Thanks to our deacons and to others for the various ways of reminding us of the things that we try to do together in serving as a congregation. We appreciate very much each one of you who helps in every single way. I want to take us this morning to the third of the three stories of serving that we have in Matthew 25. We've already read the first two in the past two Lord's Day services. This one begins at verse 31. This is Jesus. When the Son of Man comes in His glory and all the angels with Him, then He'll sit on His glorious throne. Before Him will be gathered all nations, and He will separate people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And He'll place the sheep on His right, but the goats on the left. Then the King will say to those on His right, "Come, you who are blessed by My Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me." Then the righteous will answer Him, saying, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and visit you?" And the King will answer them, "Truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these My brothers, you did it to Me." Then He'll say to those on His left, "Depart from Me, you cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me no food. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you did not welcome me. Naked, and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison, and you didn't visit me." Then they will answer, saying, "Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and did not minister to you?" Then He'll answer them, saying, "Truly I say to you, as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to Me." And these will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal fire. The images in that story have been so powerful in their impact on the human imagination that many people associate this passage entirely with the nature of Christianity. It has reappeared in great literature, Leo Tolstoy's story, where love is, God is one good example, the story of Martin Avdeyevich. There are other cases where this passage has certainly inscribed its powerful message on our hearts. The thing is, almost always we read it entirely focused on the picture of judgment, which is obviously here. And we miss, if we're not careful, the fact that it's calling us to be people who are serving for Jesus like Jesus did. And that is the thing that turns out to be the matter that separates people finally. Did we do what we could have for Jesus or not? And more particularly, did we respond to human need in any sense the way Jesus did or not? That question has to be before us. Because of the ways in which this passage sometimes strikes us, I think it might be especially helpful to remind ourselves of how it sits in the Gospel of Matthew and what that might mean about the message of this passage. In the first place, this story occurs in the same gospel record in which the Sermon on the Mount appears. Remember in Matthew chapter 4, there's the story of Jesus facing the temptation of the devil in the wilderness, and there's his resisting the temptation with, "Man shall not live by bread alone," or with, "You shall worship the Lord your God, and Him only shall you serve," or, "You shall not tempt the Lord your God." And then in Matthew chapter 5, there's what Jesus taught about our controlling our anger, our keeping our word, our respecting other people's persons and not simply using other persons to satisfy our lusts, and to respect our promises that we make with regard to marriage. And there's what's said about how we deal with people who might oppress us or might be unkind to us, and who we're kind to. All those passages are not separated from what this says here. This isn't then to be taken as negating the moral instruction of Jesus about how we live our lives. That's not what the Lord is trying to do in Matthew 25. Second, this statement, this powerful statement about how we treat people, is found in the gospel in which Jesus also speaks much about what he's intending to accomplish when he offered himself up for us all. In Matthew 20 and verse 28, you remember, the Son of Man didn't come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. If it were possible for us to so completely do everything that the end of Matthew 25 calls for, that we would have no need for someone to be a ransom for us when the day of judgment comes, Jesus wouldn't have had to do what he did. And just after this, if you remember, the next chapter, Jesus gets together with his disciples that last night, and he does what we have remembered this morning. Matthew 26, remember verse 26, "This is my body." Then the cup, "This is my blood of the new covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins." That might be saying to us that Matthew 25 is not a plan of salvation. It is a description of how people who are saved by the Lord conduct ourselves. Remember that it fits with the end of this gospel, where the gospel is to be preached to all nations. Disciples are to be made by baptizing in the name of the Father and the Son and the Spirit, and then their disciples are to be taught to do everything as the Lord has commanded, including this text here in Matthew 25. So it's not negating what Jesus taught morally, but explaining it and applying it. It's not ignoring the necessity of a sacrifice to forgive sins. It is applying it to life. And third, it's helpful to remember that this story fits with the other two stories in Matthew 25. In the first one, Christ is the bridegroom. In the second one, the Lord is the owner. In this one, he's the shepherd who separates the sheep from the goats at night so that his flocks are safe. In the first one, it calls the Lord's people, for us all, to prepare for the kingdom by serving while we can. In the second one, it told us to serve by using what the Lord has put in our hands, and with the unique opportunities and privileges that are ours alone. And then this one calls us to serve by doing what we can to prepare for the kingdom by using what God has placed in our care to help people, to deal with the human need that is in the lives of the people sitting around us here this morning. Now, with that in mind, we're ready to look at, I think, I have to do it very briefly here, and I hope practically, what we might observe from this passage about our own serving. Number one, this text presents for us the stunning news and realization that we can be helpers of Jesus Christ. You and I, ordinary people like us, can help Jesus in the work that he came to do. Matthew 5 shows him coming to bless the poor, but the poor in spirit more particularly. Coming to satisfy the hungering and thirsting, but especially the hungering and thirsting for righteousness. Coming to provide peace, or to be a peacemaker in a world where a sense of well-being and wholeness is so often missing. Coming to extend mercy in a world where harshness and cruelty is much more common. And here he is in this passage talking about us treating people like he does, with the particular pressing things that are more obvious in life. Jack Lewis, Brother Jack Lewis, in writing about this passage, says that rather than being direct service to the Lord that we're talking about here, that's been rendered to men, it's a service to the Lord by serving the least of these, his brothers. Then Brother Lewis says, to feed the hungry, to give drink to the thirsty, to show hospitality to strangers, to clothe the naked, to visit the sick, is to help Christ. Now that's the wonder. All of us who think about, well, if the Lord were here, I sure would jump right in there and help him, might miss the fact that Travis is here. We could maybe help him in some way. Or Brendan is over here. Maybe we could help him. Or Greeley here. You've helped us. Maybe we could. You see what he's getting at. We can help the Son of God, the King. That's wonderful. Second, this passage reminds us we can help in little ways. Ordinary ways. Common ways. Serving takes place not in huge, impressive, notorious actions, but in a drink of water, a crust of bread, etc. Now you realize you can read Romans 12, you can read other passages that talk to us about how to love, and you realize Jesus hasn't said everything here about how we might help people. But it's interesting that he's chosen just basic, simple, ordinary, everyday things to be the ones he calls attention to. And in 1848, James Russell Lowell wrote a very lengthy poem called The Vision of Sir Launfal. I looked it up and printed off a copy. It's impressive. I want to read you my friend Bobby Dockery's summary of the long poem. Lowell tells the story of a proud young knight on a quest for the Holy Grail. He got to stuff like that even before Indiana Jones was searching for the lost ark, I guess. Bobby explains that in medieval legend, the Holy Grail was supposedly the cup from which Jesus drank at the Last Supper. So as this story begins, Sir Launfal rides forth in his resplendent glory to seek the Grail in distant far lands, an impressive exit to go to that task. And just outside his castle, he sees a beggar who's a leper. And he's repulsed by the fellow's situation, and he scornfully tosses him a gold coin just because it's the accepted thing to do. But the poem dwells on the fact that in his heart, he recoils from the miserable situation that guy represents. The poem goes on. After many years now of vain searching for that Holy Grail, the knight returns, a broken old man, and he finds that his castle has been taken over by somebody else. But he meets still that poor beggar, much older now. But Sir Launfal also has changed. His own suffering has taught him to look at the poor man with eyes of enough love that he at least can see a brother there, a man like himself. And so Sir Launfal shares his last crust of bread with that beggar, and he gives the beggar a drink of water out of his own wooden bowl, when suddenly in this poem, the wooden bowl becomes the Holy Grail. It was a way of saying that in the use of ordinary, everyday things, that's where the stuff done for Jesus comes to have its meaning. In the third place, we not only can help Jesus, we can serve in common, ordinary ways, but we can do it without even realizing, without even dwelling on how much or how wonderful it is what we're doing. We can serve in unassuming, quiet, gentle ways. We can simply be ourselves and serve in ways that would not be big advertisements that we are serving. I wanted to point this out just to be able to say to us for a moment that what we're trying to do today is enlist a bunch of people who are not having the opportunity to serve how they want to in different ways. We're hoping you can let us know ways in which you would like to serve. Let our deacons have a list of people who want to help. But we're not suggesting by that only the organized, programmed effort has meaning. That can get us started sometimes. We can work together and that could encourage us. But we can do things for the Lord quietly, behind the scenes, and also just on our own. One of the reasons this is true is what motivates the serving. I ran across the story of an old Jewish rabbi all those centuries ago who was trying to teach a very adoring but somewhat immature young disciple. The young fellow said to him one day as he's following him to learn from him, "My master, I love you." And the old teacher stopped and turned to him and said, "Do you know what hurts me, my son?" That wasn't the answer the young fellow expected. So he said, I don't understand, Rabbi. I'm trying to tell you how much you mean to me, and you confuse me with irrelevant questions." And the old fellow answered him back, "If you don't know what hurts me, how can you truly love me?" That may be the thing that's at stake in this passage here, where we make it our common, ordinary practice to pay enough attention to people that we realize the hurts that are present in their lives. And in that way, our presence there with the possibility of helping them. You have to notice before you do. And the noticing is hard to do in our hurried world with so many things appealing for our attention and so many needs pressing upon lives. Then notice that after we serve, we help Jesus in little ways, in an unassuming manner, manner over enough period of time, we start becoming like Him. We start developing family characteristics. Do you notice that Jesus talks about doing these things to the least of these, my brothers, verse 40? What it might be easy to overlook is that in Matthew, brothers like this may have a particular meaning. In chapter 10 and verse 42, whoever gives a cup of cold water in the name of a disciple or to a disciple doesn't lose his reward. It may be that the brother is that disciple there. In 18:5 and following passages like that, these little ones are these disciples of Jesus. In chapter 12, verses 46 and following, Jesus said, my mother, my brother, and my sisters are these who do the will of my Father. In this gospel, it's talking about our being enough like Him that we think of people around us, especially the Lord's people, as our brothers and sisters. And so we notice what affects each other's lives, and we involve ourselves in doing that, especially each other. In Galatians chapter 6, Paul seems to have taken this approach when he taught us, don't grow weary, but as you have opportunity, do what's good to all people, but especially to those of the household of faith. We start with each other. That schools us then to help everybody around that we can. And then, having pursued this course long enough, what may go with not enough thought is that we're also deciding where we would be comfortable being at home, where we would fit, in which family, in which final situation we would be at home. I found some comments about this passage that seem appropriate to me, written by a commentator named Tasker. He makes the point about our serving the Lord in the ways mentioned here. He says, by the very spontaneity and unself-consciousness of love, people, by their unaffected goodness, their perseverance and well-doing, they've proved themselves to be sons of the Heavenly Father. Consequently, the kingdom prepared for them from the foundation of the world is home. On the other hand, there's the other group who are assigned to the place prepared for the devil and his angels. And he comments, they find themselves condemned because they have paid heed to the devil's suggestion that self-interest should be the primary motive in conduct. And in consequence, they shut their eyes to the spectacle of human misery and turned a deaf ear to the cries of their suffering followers. So devoid of loving kindness themselves, they cannot receive or be comfortable with loving kindness from the Lord. They're not at home with it. Now that's a way we might think of what we're talking about in serving. We can be people who help Jesus. We can do it in ordinary, common, everyday ways. We can do it as an unassuming people who are not focused on ourselves or not putting on goodness. We can do it long enough to develop a family likeness, and in so doing, we'll be choosing where we'll be at home. That's a way to think of this passage that might be helpful to us today. Just a couple of days after Jesus taught these words in Matthew 25, he endured the fire of suffering himself. He offered to make it possible for any of us to be counted among the ones blessed in this passage. He paid the price for those who are starving for spiritual food. He provided the water of life that we need to replenish life. He provided the clothing of righteousness for people like me and maybe you who've lived in the filthy rags of our own achievements. He provided friendship for the love and love for the sick and the suffering. He provided hope for the hopeless. And then 50 days after he was raised up, having given himself for us, the gospel was preached. He invited anyone to believe in it to the point that we'd repent and let God rule our lives, and that we'd be joined with him in baptism for the forgiveness of our sins, and that we would engage in a new life which includes this kind of treatment to our fellow man. If we could assist you today in making that beginning, we'd be glad to do so if you'll let us know while we stand and sing.